So the winter's drawing in. It's over. The summer was over. We never even had a summer. It was so depressing. Nothing happened, except there was a lot of rain, a great deal of rain. More rain ever since records began. Yes. Not that we have any idea what that means. There was this strange period in history with no records at all. People would leave their homes and go, it feels slightly different yesterday. Is anybody writing this down? And then after a period of time, somebody said, enough's enough, I will write this down. I would like to announce that records have begun. That first day must have been quite a record-breaking day, don't you think? It's the hottest, wettest, windiest day since records began. This morning, when it just started. I think it's about the wind as well, on the weather. Who cares about the wind? It's going to be a stiff northeasterly breeze. I'm not sailing to work. I don't give a shit. People see that and go, I'll leave slightly later with a tailwind. I'll be there in half the time. Then the clocks are going to change. Nobody knows when the clocks are going to change. They change on a Saturday night. Nobody knows it's going to happen. Everybody the same every Saturday night, every year. They don't know which way or what's going on. You only find out about it late on Saturday night. You overhear somebody, excuse me, what was that? The clocks, they changed. When? Tonight? Darling, the clocks, they, which way? They go back. Is that the good one? How many years do we need to be alive before we know when they change and which way? An extra hour! Woohoo! The only thing we can look forward to, ladies and gentlemen, in this winter is snow. It's the only thing that gets us through, because the weather's terrible, but snow is the holy grail. Nothing beats snow. And normally, we get one day of snow, and you gotta hope that it snows overnight so you can be snowed in. Earlier this year, it snowed in the middle of the day. You don't want that. I was waiting for my bus, and where I live, there's no tube. You have to wait for the bus. The buses actually originate there. The bus is already there. So it's even more frustrating. I'm waiting for the driver. We've got everything we need. We're looking for people. Can you drive this thing? And that's when the snow came. Amazing, instantly landing snow. The best of snow. I mean, the most unbelievable snow. And then I realized, oh my God, I could get snowed out. This is not what I need. The driver shows up and he says, ladies and gentlemen, I regret to inform you, due to the chaos on the roads, it's been snowing 8 seconds at this point. We're cancelling the bus. There will be no running of this service. And we're like, well, hang on a minute. We bought our tickets. What are we going to do? How are we supposed to get home? There's nowhere to get home. What are we going to do? And he said, don't shout at me. I actually live at the other end of this bus route. I take this bus home and then I'm relieved by another driver. And we're like, well, this is a very interesting development. How are you going to get home? There's only one thing to do, walk. It's the only way we can get home. It's the only way at all. I'm like, fine, okay. So we walked the bus route, led by the driver. We came to the first stop. We had to tell the people waiting, there's no bus. And they joined our imaginary bus. It was getting bigger and bigger. I looked behind us, I could see the next imaginary bus. Not a bus, just people walking. And it was catching up fast, because no one to pick up from the stops. And the driver saw this as well, and he turned around. He said, when we get to the next stop, don't tell them anything. Keep walking, they can get on the next one. I thought this was one of the funniest things that ever happened to me. I said to the woman walking next to me, I said, this is hilarious, we're on an imaginary bus. There's a driver, there are old people walking, and this is funny, right? And I thought we were on the same wavelength, but now I remember I was doing most of the talking, because she said, I'd love to chat. But this is my stop. She got out at an actual bus stop and then walked in the direction we had just come from.
And the thing I never bargained for with the kids is that they get sent home with homework from what? The age of 3 now, is it? Yeah, don't they? What a total waste of time. What these teachers don't understand about children of that age group is that you can divide them into two categories. There's the first kind of child who will look at a piece of paper with a sum on it and think, 3 and 3 equals 6. Then there's the other kind of child, who eats the paper. Where's your homework? Oh, okay. In fact, the only thing kids use homework for is just a ploy to stay up later when it's bedtime. They deliberately don't tell you, don't they? They keep it back. They don't tell you they've got homework. They hold it back. They're playing their cards close to their chest. They're waiting for that moment. Come on, you've seen your program. Turn the television off. Up to bed. I still have homework to do. I think that trumps you, sir.
So you had, I think, a homework, and you have to do the homework with them because they can't concentrate for more than 2 minutes at that age. You've got to sit with them, actually keep them there at the table. If you don't, you go back after 2 minutes, they'll be out in the garden swinging on something. You go, what the hell are you doing? What are you doing? You're meant to be doing... Oh, sorry, I felt like having a swing on something instead. So you have to stand over them while they're doing it. They have to do this... Oh, my kids have this spelling thing. They have to copy out the spelling every night. I don't know if it's humanly possible to move your hand across paper any slower than they're doing at that stage in their writing career. But what I am saying is I find it fucking agonising watching. And, 4 minutes later, I've done it. That's good. That's the first letter done. Well done.
Jesus Christ!
Got to the point with the homework that I couldn't watch it being done anymore. I had had enough of this, you know? And I was tucking them all in. I'd done it with three others, the other three kids, and then this last one, he goes, I haven't done my homework. And I couldn't face it anymore. I snapped, you know? I said, well, you know what? Leave it. Leave it. I imagine if you do leave it, that something will have happened by the morning. And I did. I went downstairs, got my pencil out, and I did it myself. I did the homework myself. I did it with my left hand, so it looked like proper crap writing. Real method job. I had my tongue sticking out. Halfway through, I went out in the garden, have a swing on something. Came back in, had a glass of milk and a biscuit, got on with the rest of it. And I did it myself. Whizzed it off. Don't do it yourself, please. This is my story. Don't do it yourself, because if you do, you get hooked. You get hooked on doing it. You can't go back to watching it being done. You have to do it yourself, and you start to look forward to it. You look forward to the homework. It's like a little quiz every day. Yes, you know the answer of a couple of these ones. Yeah. It got so bad, I was doing it night after night, his spelling list. But the trouble is, I can't spell. I really can't spell. Hopeless. I mean, in fact, after 4 weeks, we got called into the school. Very sorry to say that your son is educationally subnormal. Take a look at his spelling, I think it says it all. So what can I say? I can't admit, I can't say it was me. Couldn't admit to be me. So, well, he's in a home now.
So. Filming the traffic, and before I knew it, I was surrounded by area boys. These are the local gangsters in Lagos. Give me your camera, we will kill you, you cannot film us. Give us the camera, give us the camera. And I was like, guy, oi, I'm from Hackney, get out of here. That's right, don't mess with me. I kept my camera. Well, they got the camera, I got the tape, but though, I got the tape. Nigeria, it's a hustle to live there. It's a hard place to live. Like, you commit a murder in Nigeria, you will get away with it. You will. And I'll tell you why, because we ain't got no CSI in Nigeria. The police turn up at a crime scene and they're like that. Okay, there's a dead body, there's a dead body. Somebody has been killed. Nigeria, it's not just Nigeria. I've been all over the world. I've experienced different things, you know. I went to the Caribbean, went to Jamaica. Any Jamaicans in? I went to Jamaica. I was over there. And my friend, I was over there with my friend, and my friend's great-grandfather died while we were there. And we went to the funeral home to pick up the body. And as I said, it's a hustle to live out there. There was a guy outside the funeral home trying to sell us stuff as we went in. He came up to us like that. Psst, psst. You want to buy a cheaper coffin? go inside, get the body, bring it in the alley, out the back. I'll meet you on the other side. That wasn't the worst of it, people. That wasn't the worst of it. We went in to pick up the body, and none of the bodies were labelled. I will repeat that. None of the bodies were labelled. We're like that. We're here to pick up Mr. Spencer. And the guy was like that. Right, Mr. Spencer. Mr. Spencer. Which one looks like a Mr. Spencer? You're going to have to look yourself. Come and have a look yourself. Come. Open the coffin. Is that Mr. Spencer? That's not Mr. Spencer? No? All right, then come. What about this one? Is this one Mr. Spencer? Look inside, man. I know it doesn't have any face, but do you recognize the fit flap? No, that's not Mr. Spencer. All right, come. What about this one? Look inside, man. Is that Mr. Spencer? What are you crying for? That's not Mr. Spencer. What are you crying for? Is that Mr. Spencer? No? What about this one? Well, after about 20 bodies, like that. Forget it. Give me that one. Try and explain it to the kids at the funeral. Yes, Johnny, sometimes when the body decomposes, it does turn into a white woman. Yeah, sometimes.
The man wears trousers, he's still a man. When the girl wears trousers, she's still a girl. When your dad wears lipstick, alarm bells. When the roller coaster's fast, it makes you feel high. When the roller coaster spins, the world whizzes by. When there's blood on the seats, alarm bells. When an airline pilot says, fasten your seatbelts, that's all right. When he says there's a bit of turbulence, it's just part of the flight. When you overhear him say, what does that line mean? Alarm bells. In your life, there are sights and smells, but listen out for those alarm bells. For example, I am now a quarter of the way through my act. Alarm bells, there they are, ladies and gentlemen. So this bloke said to me, he said, Tim, he said, did you know Marie Osmond is about to appear in the world's worst film? I said, Warner Brothers. He said, I already have. So I went to the record shop. I said, what have you got by the doors? He said, a bucket of sand and a fire blanket. I said, can you recommend some music for a kid's party? He said, small faces. I said, of course they have, the kids. My mum and dad are complete opposites. You couldn't hope to meet two such totally different blokes. My local police chief does a talk on heroin, so you can't understand any of it. Do you know, I was mugged recently. I was at Victoria Station, and I was mugged, and I burst into tears. And a policeman came up to me. He said, I'm fining you £10. I said, for crying out loud. He said, yes. So I gave him a description of the mugger, and he built up a photo fit. And when I looked at it, it looked exactly like me. So he took me in for questioning. He said, where were you at 5 o'clock? I said, I was at Victoria Station. He said, it's not looking good, is it? I said, I've got to go to court on a drink driving charge. He said, is it the Old Bailey? I said, no, Harvey's Bristol Cream. He said, why don't you drink non-alcoholic wine? I said, Schlur. He said, why don't you drink alcoholic wine? Tequila, schnapps, sambuca. I'm calling the shots. So I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, I can't stop gambling. He said, you want Gamblers Anonymous? I said, you're probably right, I'm so drunk, I don't know where I am. I saw this sign, it said hairdressing for men. I walked in, there was a rabbit trying on clothes, and all these blokes going, yeah, very nice. So I went to the cinema, I saw a very sad film, and the bloke behind me suddenly started wailing. I got hit in the back of the head with the harpoon. Do
But you know, I love reading. At the moment, I'm reading My Life by Bill Clinton, which freaked me out because I didn't know he knew anything about my life. And this bloke said to me, he said, "I've got bubonic plague." I said, "Don't give me that." Ladies and gentlemen, I'll leave you with this. Well, I didn't bring it with me. Today I had dinner with my boss and his wife, and it was a complete disaster. My boss's wife said to me, she said, "Tim, how many potatoes would you like?" I said, "I just have one." She says, "All right, you don't have to be polite." I said, "All right then, I just have one, you stupid cow." Thank you very much, good night, God bless.
We need to bring back a sense of consequences for our actions. In this world, there are no more consequences for actions, yeah? And what I'm talking about, if there's no consequences in this life, what we need to do is bring back to Britain a simple sense of hell. The idea, if we screw up in this life, right, we will burn in sulphur for all eternity in the next life. Now, this is quite a tough sell, right? You don't like that idea, do you? Right, but hear me out, this is a good idea. We've got any Christians present, I need your assistance. Any Christian people here this evening? Yeah, yeah, in the pink shirt. What's your name, son?
Josh.
Fantastic. You're Christian? I am. So you understand the idea of redemption, eternity, yeah? Resurrection, eternity in particular. And I do too. I understand the notion of eternity because I went to church on Sunday. Let me tell you this. That service went on forever. If it took me an hour to open a bottle of wine, I'd be drummed out of business. Now, the point is this. How long does it take to own a packet of crisps? Get on with it. We need to bring back... So now, the problem with the idea of hell is no-one's frightened of it. Now, I'm going to describe hell for you now, and none of you are going to bat an eyelid, right? And while your body's boiling into mouldering in the grave, we'll take your soul and boil it in boiling oil for 1,000 millennium. Then after that, 2 sulphurous demons, emissaries of Satan himself, will come along, pull out your kidneys and set fire to them on the red-hot coals of hell itself. Then after this, another demon will come along, pull out your eyeballs, stick them on a red-hot poker, burn them on the hot coals of hell, and stick them up your arsehole, and they'll come out of your own mouth with your shit on it. And this will go on forever. So you're not bothered by that, are you? In fact, most of you are laughing at it. Huh? In fact, most of us, being British, are thinking, well, come on then! Call yourself the devil! And that's the interesting thing about hell, isn't it? When you describe it, when someone describes hell, it tells you everything you need to know about that person, right? And what he's like and what his people are like. And I describe hell then in a normal British accent, which tells you that we, the British, are stoic, tough people who could take absolutely bloody anything. And that's the interesting thing about hell. It tells you about the people telling you about it. Hell, in a French accent, for instance, sounds like a recipe. And whilst the body is lying down on the worms inside the flesh, we take out the soul and place it in very hot oil for a long time. Then, once it is tender, 2 demons come together at once, remove the kidneys and place them on the hot coals with a little white wine vinegar, some sea salt, and cook them till they're brown on the outside, but still pink in the middle. Then after this, we take the eyeballs, place them on the hot coals, cook them till crunchy on the outside, runny in the middle, on the hot poker, stick them up the arse, they come out the mouth with the shit on. It is delicious. Absolutely delicious. Okay, you see? Perverts! Perverts, basically, yeah? Hell. Hell in a Dutch accent sounds like a pretty good stag do, doesn't it? And while your body is lying down, we'll take you to the hottest place you can imagine. Imagine the hottest place you can go, yeah? Now go even hotter. And 2 demons will come together and rub oil all over your body. 2 demons together. 2 demons together at once. And then you will take out your kidneys. Oh, your hot kidneys. Your hot kidneys. And place the kidneys in a hot place and cook the kidneys till they're hard, until your kidneys are hard, and then take out your eyeballs and stick them in your bum hole. And this will cost you 45 euros. Hey, are you ready?
But I have developed a new hobby. Some of you probably already do this. I've started listening into people's conversations on the bus and the train. It's quite entertaining. And I was listening not long ago to 2 old ladies, and they were talking about what they would do if they were men for a day. And I thought, this is going to be brilliant, because pensioners are, by definition, bonkers. But I went out to lunch with a couple of my friends, and I thought, well, I'll ask them the same question. So my first friend, I said, what would you do if you were a man for a day? Without even thinking, she just went, I'd have a wank! sounded like she needed to. She sounded awfully tense. But these old ladies, different generation to me and my friends, in their 80s, and one of them just said, Edith, what would you do if you're a man for a day? The other one said, no, in my luck, I'd get a Tuesday. And what can you do on a Tuesday? My second friend, I said, what would you do if you're a man for a day? She just said, I just do everything. And I thought she meant like in a sexual way. And I said, is that what you mean? Like you just do everything. And I said, is that what you mean? She went, no, no. Just all the little jobs round the house. But I've been trying to go on a diet. I'm not really very successful. But I find that whenever I go shopping and I can't get into things, you know, when you try clothes on and you're the size you weren't expecting to be, I just come home and I put on a song, and the song is Big Girls Don't Cry. You know the song, there's a couple of versions of it, Big Girls Don't Cry. Such a load of rubbish that, isn't it? Big Girls Don't Cry. Yeah, they do. Cry because they're fat, cry because they can't get a boyfriend, and they cry because there's no trifle left. But I was on holiday in Spain last year, and I'm bragging, I know, and outside the hotel was a lovely pool, and I wanted to go in the pool, of course I did, but I'm not overly confident with my figure in a swimming costume, and I was watching the women who were walking in the pool, and these were like tiny, you know, these wafer thin, tiny women. And I thought, I'm not going to walk in with one of them. If I walk in with one of them, people are going to think I've bloody eaten one. And I wouldn't anyway, because there's no meat on them. So what I decided to do instead is just to walk in with the children, because kids are all really fat these days. If I walk in the same time as a 9-year-old boy who's got bigger tits than me, nobody's looking at me anymore. But like I say, I don't have kids, and most of my friends don't have kids, but I think if you ask any woman who doesn't have kids what would worry them about having kids would always be childbirth. It's quite a reasonable thing to worry about childbirth. From what I understand, it changes your downstairs, doesn't it? It changes your downstairs. I quite like my downstairs the way it is, thanks very much. Certainly don't want a bloody extension. To change though, isn't it? Because you're forcing a person out. That's what you're doing. You're forcing a person out. I've never forced a person out. I forced a couple in. With a shoehorn.
I'll say a bit more about myself. I'm from the north of England. I had a very strange upbringing. My dad, he was very old-fashioned. When my sister had her menstrual cycle, he made her go and live in the shed, claiming that she was the evil seed of Satan. It's a little bit old-fashioned, isn't it? It's very sad. My sister died very young. She drowned. But, you know, like my dad said, look on the bright side. If she'd have floated, it would have had to set fire to her anyway. So, she was... My nan was great, though. She was great, my nan. I remember the last thing she said to me just before she died. She said, what are you doing in here with that hammer? Do you ever do that thing when you're a kid where you try and slip in swear words in front of your nan to try and impress your mate? How many swear words can we fit in without nan not noticing? I'll go first. Anyone for coffee, nan? Anyone for coffee? Is it half a cup? Ah, oh, fuck up! Ah, oh, fuck up, is it? What time is it? Tampax 2. Tampax 2. Do you expect me to believe that? It's jolly well possible. Anyone fuck off me? The last time we tried it, we were in a Chinese restaurant. We went, oh, Nam, there's no fork and knife. What are we going to do? There's no fork and knife, Nam. There's no fork and knife. What are we going to do, Nam? She went, I don't know. I'll probably try and have to use the fork and chopsticks, your patronising pair of little It's her attitude. If you can't beat them, what's the point in having kids? I'm obsessed with swearing, though, because this is great, because this show's going out after 9:30. Well, it is now, but this show's going out after 9:30, right? How did I know it was CBeebies? No, it's going on after 9:30, and, I love the fact that... I don't know why, but you can't swear on telly before 9:30, but you can after 9:30. I think the BBC, as a nation, just think we're all just sat around going, oh, Marjorie,
Would you possibly pass me the bread sauce? This fish is simply divine. Why, certainly, Kenneth. It really is a tasty salmon. Tell me, my darling, are you aware of the time? Why, allow me to check on my small pocket antique silver wristwatch, left for me by Grandpapa all of these years ago in his will. Why, I believe it has just gone the hour of 9:30. Thank fuck for that! Let's get shit and shit on the Christmas tree, you dirty bitch! Like I say, I'm from Lancashire, and I haven't got a proper Lancashire accent anymore. That went a few years ago, I'm afraid, because proper Lancashire, of course, is surprised to hell about everything all the time, innit? Real issues in a shoe shop, couldn't believe it, it were great. Opened a tin of peas, looked inside, there were peas, it were great. My favourite accent at the moment is the South African accent. I love the fact that the South African accent is just, you know when you used to record records in the 70s backwards, and then when you played them backwards, they sounded forwards? That's what South African is, isn't it? It's just the record player backwards. Hello, my name's Lee, and I'm from England. Oh, my name's Dave, and I came from South Africa. I don't know you get it, my black ethnic. I don't like it living in London. It's too expensive. It's too expensive and I don't like it. Kill your parents. Kill them. Kill them. Beelzebub. Kill your parents. Whereas the Australians, they just sound like a record that won't start properly. Where are you from, mate?
I'm from Melbourne, mate.
And how long have you lived there?
Mate, 14 fucking years, mate. Fucking 11, mate.
So I came to Britain in the early 80s. We were refugees long before it became fashionable. But my favourite immigrants are Polish people because they've properly confused old-fashioned racists. Have you seen them? They don't know what to do. What do we do? What do we say? They're immigrants, but they're white. I heard this one bloke go, "Bloody Poles coming over here with their work ethic." Which isn't very politically correct, and I try so hard to be politically correct, sometimes I take it too far. I was at a party recently and I said to my friend, have you met Steve? He's a really nice guy. My friend goes, which one's Steve? Steve was the only black guy in the room. I found myself going, Steve, yeah, he's over there, he's got blue jeans on, a grey t-shirt, sort of curly hair, and a Nigerian accent. And once I was performing at a comedy club and there was two black guys in the front row, like you two, but men and black. You are a man, sir, I'm sorry. It's the lights. And I said to them, so how do you two know each other? And they looked at each other and went, we don't. Might as well have had NF tattooed on my forehead. I didn't, it was felt tip. I like friendly, a little bit of friendly racism is nice. When I was a little girl, I used to always go to my friend Katie's house, and every time her dad opened the door, he'd go, hello, Shuffy, been on holiday? So, I have a little boy, I have a baby boy, I'm a mum, and I'm looking at you, some of you are so young, I could be your mummy if I lived somewhere rural. Like a lot of women, I got to my 30s and I thought, I've got to have a baby now. Well, my mum's still young enough to look after it for me. And I went to all the antenatal classes and this woman came up to me, one of the other mums goes, oh, how are you planning on losing your baby weight? And I was like, well, I was just thinking of having the child. And she was like, oh, I'm going to be a yummy mummy. I'm going to lose all my yummy mummy. That's just like a middle-class way of saying MILF. I was so happy when I found out that I was pregnant. And we had a scan and we knew that it was a boy. And people said to me, why did you find out the sex of your baby? Didn't you want a surprise? Well, it's going to be a boy or a girl, do you know what I mean? The only surprise would have been if it was a puppy. And there are no puppies in my family. There's one goat. It's not a blood relation. Thank goodness I have a child. It was no fun being a broody Iranian woman. Every time I said to people, my body clock's ticking, they'd hit the ground. So with all that going on, when I did find out I was pregnant, I was so delighted. I thought, I am going to fill this child's life up with love and hope and understanding. My husband's reaction was slightly different. He walked around going, woohoo! My soul just worked! Isa! Isa! It's not his. Oh, the fuss he made when he found out I was cheating on him. Only child. Can't share. My husband's English, he's from Nottingham, and a lot of people ask me if my husband's Iranian. And I go, well, he's not, he's English, but he's planning to convert. His family are absolutely lovely, and when they first met me, they kept going, oh, Shappy's so exotic, she's so exotic, which means foreign, but not in a way that we hate.
Are any Welsh people out there? Tell them! Tell them how good it is now! Oh, it's not shit anymore! We spent millions, so it's not shit for you. That's the whole... Have you... Welsh people, where are you from? Fair enough, it's shit. Yeah, quite good. Yeah. I'm trying to explain that the place has improved and you lob Swansea in, Duster. Lucky Swansea's still a desperate dump, isn't it, let's face it? Devoid of any hope whatsoever, Swansea. The... Have you been? There's a sign on the way in that says, kill our children, not your speed, isn't there? Is a... I'm talking about places like Cardiff and the places that have... Yes! These places have improved. We've had development money. We've done... Cardiff Bay, have you been there? Go there on holiday. It's lovely. We've done it all up. You've got cafes and bars. You've got the sea down there now. It's amazing. Down where the shit was, that's all sea now, most of it. And it's going to be amazing when they finish it. Has anybody seen the posters of what Cardiff Bay is going to be like when it's all done? It's not. It's going to be amazing. There's going to be people chatting, laughing, texting. Welsh people, these are, presumably. Having interesting conversations over dinner. We're all going to be a lot better looking by the time it's finished as well. You look out. Where are they going to get these people with fashionable glasses and teeth from in Cardiff? I got no idea. You've got to admire their optimism, haven't you? Fair play. Talking of optimism, you've got Cardiff Bay. I was there not long ago. Some of these restaurants, some of them have got tables outside. Al fresco dining in Cardiff. They're having a laugh on me. I tried to have a Twix at a bus stop in Wales a few years ago. It was too wet to eat, to be honest with you. Everybody's pretending it's Madrid. Come on, we'll sit outside. Your soup bowl's filling up faster than you can eat it, for Christ's sake. Stop raining! You never get past your starters after 7 hours of soup and rainwater, you give up. Sue, your gin and tonic's overflowing, the little umbrella's blown inside out. Turn it back into the wind! Turn it back into the wind! It's waiters with frosted eyebrows fighting their way to the table. Spaghetti carbonara! Spaghetti carbonara! Sure, I'll get another one! I'll get another one! It's people throwing life buoys to their bread rolls. I'll pull you in! I'll pull you in! Peas being airlifted to safety. Oh, Wales is improving. Even the valleys. Go to the valleys on holiday, even the valleys. They are, shut your face, they're getting better. They're getting better, the Welsh valleys. I did a gig in Pontypridd, in the Welsh valleys. Were you there at the gig I did when there was a piece of sun-dried tomato on the stage? Not bullshit, in a real piece of sun-dried tomato. We couldn't even do the gig, everybody was just staring at it. I couldn't get them back. I couldn't get their attention. That's not local to your area, is it? The sun-dried tomato? Hey, there was a pile-up in the valleys a few years ago because somebody mentioned satsumas. Did you read about that? Somebody's trodden that, haven't they? That's what's happened. That's, do you live here now, madam? Is that, do you live here? And are you from the valleys?
My boyfriend is from the valleys.
Your boyfriend? It was probably him that trod in the sun-dried tomato and dragged it all the way back. That's what he probably stepped in the sun-dried tomato in London and took it all the way back to the... He must have been shitting himself on the way back. They'll kill you for that in Pontypridd, won't they? Get it off me! They're going to kill me! They're going to kill me! Ditch the shoe! Ditch the shoe!
My girlfriend said to me, have you been having sex behind my back? I said, who the fucking hell do you think it was? And another thing, it wouldn't kill you to look round once in a while, check how I'm doing. Well, I'm Jimmy Carr, and we've got Alan Carr on the show later on. How about that? Right? I keep on getting mistaken for Alan Carr, so what I've done is I've stopped sucking men off. Don't get the wrong idea. You know, I'm a very gay-friendly act. I was asked last year to judge Mr. Gay UK. I said, no problem at all. He's against nature and against God, and he's going to hell. Right, who have we got in the audience this evening? We've got Nikki Hambleton-Jones is in. Hello. I've seen your show. Yours is the one where you get ladies naked and then they cry. We've all been there. For me, that's a very successful Friday night out. Have we got James Morrison? Is James Morrison in the house? Where's he? Can't believe it. Hello, James. How are you? An amazing musician, especially if you find James Blunt a bit rocky. You Give Me Something's an amazing song. You Give Me Something is my favourite song ever about chlamydia. My favourite, I love it. Dean Macy's here, where's Dean Macy? Dean Macy? You're our hope for Beijing, aren't you, in the decathlon? I love the decathlon. You know, it's where you do 10 different things, isn't it? Sort of jack of all trades, master of none. If you don't mind me saying. The 2012 Olympics is going to cost £8 billion, which is, you know, a lot of money. It's probably going to bankrupt London, but you can't put a price on 2 bronze medals in cycling. Incidentally, ladies and gentlemen, the highest speed ever achieved on a bicycle was done by a British man, 166 miles per hour on a bike. It was recorded at a level crossing. £8 billion is a lot of money. I mean, for that kind of money, we could have another 3 weeks in Iraq. I don't have a stalker, but I do have a woman that sends me pants in the post. Thanks, Mum. People ask me how I relax, so I tell them. I put Smarties tubes onto cats' legs to make them walk like a robot. If I'm really stressed, I make them go down the stairs. It's adorable, they look so confused. I realise some of you will be worried about the cat. Don't worry about the cat. If it's hurt, if it breaks its leg, it's already got a splint on. I should warn you, don't kick off this evening. I'm middle class, but I'm hard. Al dente, you might say. If you got the al dente reference, you're middle class too, well done. I've got quite a posh voice, though. Would you agree with that, Hammersmith? Yeah. It's quite a posh voice, but we've all got a phone voice. Mine's quite breathy. I quite like those phone sex lines. I like them because they're the only place in the world where premature ejaculation is an advantage. I once came in under 75 pence.
You know, when you're in love with somebody, you rarely see them at work. You rarely see them doing the thing that they do and you can't. It's extremely attractive. Go follow your partner someday to work. If they're having an affair, it'll be a hideous conclusion. But just watch them doing the thing. It's really cool, because you can't do it, they can. You're going, oh, feckin' look, you're fantastic, you're glorious. Particularly when they're saving a life. Jesus, glorious. You're there going, oh, you're beautiful, I love you, and you're making me look good right now. Yeah, she's mine. She's my girlfriend. Look at her, she's glorious. She's saving her life. Trophy bird, right? I had to be peeled off the doctor the day of the mini stroke. Seriously, she was underneath me going, that's very flattering, but could I deal with the situation first, right? And I was behind her going, no, she'll be unconscious for a while, yes. Apologise, she's actually in the room tonight, sorry about that. But it is nothing more attractive than seeing the person. I mean, the doctor here, have you a partner there with you? Have you a boyfriend or husband with you? He's a teacher, so he's not in the medical trade. My teacher friend, isn't it sexy? Have you seen her ever deal with an emergency, have you?
Not yet.
Not yet, he said, laughing. Get her to run over one of these feckers on the way home tonight. Dude, it's extremely attractive. But the one bad thing is, you're very clannish people, the doctors. They have a tendency to hang around together in little groups, right? Okay. My teacher friend, do you have to go to loads of social events where it's just you and doctor, 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 doctor? Does that happen to you, my friend, does it?
I hate it!
Yeah, I know, it's a nightmare! I hate it, he said. I am articulating your pain, my friend. He hates it, ladies and gentlemen, because there's times I've been at dinner parties and it's doctor, 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 and I'm the only feckin' muggles in the room, right? And they don't know half as much as you give them credit for. My friend, if you're ever at another dinner party and it's all doctors, feck with their heads. It's remarkably easy to do. If you're ever out with a load of doctors and they're going, well, today I performed a fucking dugandectomy. You just go, yeah, but what are hiccups exactly? There's many competing theories at the moment. And then you go, why, if you stay in bed longer, do you feel more tired? It's not my specialty, that particular field. Does time heal all wounds? Who the fuck invited you to this dinner party anyway? What are the Oil of Olay seven signs of aging? No one actually knows what the Oil of Olay seven signs of aging are, right? Apparently they start with little lines around the eyes and finish with a woman sitting on a stairs with a bottle of gin going, I gave him the best years of my life! And it takes a feckin' hell of a cream to get rid of that, let me tell you. Doctor, one final question. Doctor at the back there, my surgeon friend, liver and pancreas, answer me this. What are hiccups exactly?
Diaphragmatic irritation.
A diaphragmatic irritation. Good woman yourself, very good. Let the punters at home know, she said, diaphragmatic irritation, which is right. I also would have accepted any arrhythmic irritation of the phrenic nerve. Please, please. I'm not a doctor. I'm just riding one. Okay.
I've been doing camp-old nonsense in show business for 20 years now, and I've worked with some fascinating people. People like Postman Pat. I'm sorry to tell you, but the man's a I'm sorry for language. But we did Panto a couple of years ago, and he was constantly upstaging me and pulling focus. In the end, I said, you're a cunt. Doesn't walk like that offstage, you know, it's all put on. And on the other hand, you know, I've worked with some fascinating people, people like Dale Winton. Dale Winton and I went to stage school together, and when we were both about 15, we shot up together. Dale is lovely. He'll do anything for anybody, anything from helping an old lady across the road to buggery. There was one awful occasion when he got a bit confused. Afraid so. Buggered an old lady across the road, but she saw the funny side of it. Put it down to youthful high spirits. But if I had to think of a highlight of my career, well, there are two, really. I did two Royal Variety performances, and you get to meet the royals afterwards, which is the whole point, really. Have you met them, Abby? Not encountered any royalty, it's just a question of time. The second Royal Variety was in front of Her Majesty the Queen, and I was standing there with Frankie Dettori on one side, and she got to me, and just before she got to me, suddenly became aware of a little kind of smidgen of wind that was trapped within, as can happen, and I thought, well, I can't really drop one in front of the Queen. That's probably treason. So I'll have to get rid of it, and because sometimes you can get rid of wind from whence it came by, you know, willpower and internal squeezing. Well, I had a go at that, but it wasn't going anywhere. So I'd let nature take its course, and unfortunately, on that occasion, I shat myself. It's not always the way, though. Just when you're about to meet a monarch. No, it's all right. I mean, I better just explain, because I'm on this special diet, no wheat, no meat, no dairy, no cigarettes, no alcohol, I barely breathe diet. And as a consequence, my stools are not as other people's. They're very, very compact, kind of capsule-type affairs. hardly any bigger than a Nurofen Plus. And fragrant, I might add. Generally lavender-scented, sometimes with a hint of juniper. People use them as drawer fresheners. They will be on sale in the foyer as you leave. Make an ideal Christmas gift. And she said to me, oh, very, very good. Were you very nervous? I said, oh, just a turd, a tad. And so I thought I'd better get rid of it. And I shook my leg like that. And it shot across the stage. Who should be over there but Dame Shirley Bassey? Well, she's a wise old bird. And she saw it coming and she deflected it. Like that, it shot through the air. Who should be over there with her mouth open as usual but Claire Sweeney? And I'm afraid. Poor old Claire, she's been talking shit ever since.
We're here to talk about relationships. Let's crack straight on with the first slide. Making. Don't laugh at that. That's not meant to be funny, please. Let's not have another Folkestone on our hands, please. Making divorce work. Now, given that it is a rocky ride, an emotional roller coaster, I start off with a joke, ladies and gentlemen, just to loosen us up. Here it is. If you're going to get divorced, you have to be like the man in the toll booth. Why is that, Keith? Well, you have to be willing to accept, this is the joke, change. It's a zinger. When you divorce, there is sweeping change. Changes right across your life, in every area. One of the first things to change is the locks. You make a... You may come home one day and find that your key no longer fits your wife's lock. Another man's key is fitting your wife's lock. And stop that! Stop it! Stop! I'm stamping on that. Riaz, with a Z, please. Stop it. It's not that sort of a show. Well, I mean, it's not a show, is it? It's a talk. But it's not smutty. So you may come home and find that your key no longer fits the lock. Good. Yes, it can. And it can be very difficult to tell why a relationship is going to go wrong. Why is that? Well, I think it's because at the beginning of any relationship, when two people get together, there's always a sense of what? Hammersmith, at the beginning of a relationship, a sense of... Worry. And, pardon?
Worry.
Worry. No. Anyone else? At the beginning of a relationship, a sense of... Foreboding. Foreboding is the wrong answer. Lust. No. Uncertainty. There's always a sense of uncertainty. A feeling of will they, won't they? And there's no way of... Please, Hammersmith, take it seriously. We're talking about emotions. A sense of will they, won't they? And there's no... Hammersmith, I will walk off the stage, please. There's no way of predicting when a couple get together whether or not the relationship will work. Will it last a long time? No. Not a chance in hell. Will they stick together? No. Will the marriage endure? Yes. Lee and Leslie. Now, Lee and Leslie are a lesson to us all. They've made a marriage work. So why is it then that when they can make a marriage work, so many others can't? Paul Simon said, there are 50 ways to leave your lover. One. Hammersmith, time out. Please, start to take it seriously. One, slip out the back, Jack. Two, make a new plan, Stan. And 48 others.